We're talking turkeys here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Dan Small, host producer of Outdoor Wisconsin, public television show out of Milwaukee, and then Outdoors Radio with Dan Small, contributing editor for Wisconsin Outdoor News, and great to have him back. And it's also great to have Jeff Frederick with us. Jeff is he has competed in turkey calling competitions for more than 20 years. He's got a whole wall, I think, filled with his trophies. He builds turkey calls, and he does custom decoys through his business, Champion's Choice. And he's been a very avid turkey hunter for more than 30 years. Won the National Wild Turkey Federation's Wisconsin State Chapter Turkey Calling Contest.
12 times,
and even dozen. Oh, that's great. You know, before we go, we have lots of callers online here, but before, I really loved how the story that you have to tell about how you got interested in all of this.
Yeah, it was right here in Madison. My family always attended, through their business, the Deer and Turkey Expo, which I think it was called the Deer Classic back then, at the Coliseum. And here I am, a 10, 11, 12-year-old kid, and the show coordinators would give me little odd jobs, and I'd get an extra, like, $20 bill. So you know what I did is I hung out at the booths where these guys were making really cool noises with a little contraption that was inside their mouth. And shortly thereafter, my father and I got our first turkey tags in Wisconsin in 1987, and we're pretty much hooked from that point on.
Yeah, and you worked on that calling business. I mean, on learning to call.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I grew up north of Madison, between Cambria and Partyville. And when I was in high school, there were not turkey seasons yet. But I was an aspiring contest caller. So I went out in the woods and called and did things with the real turkeys. And that is how I learned what to say to the turkeys.
And we'll talk at some point here. I'm sure we're going to be talking about what to say to the turkeys. I've had some success with it, but I wouldn't even call myself in the same zip code as you when it comes to calling. So I think it's a great story. And you had an art degree as well. You got an art degree at one point, did you not?
Yes. I graduated from MATC. It was MATC then, with a commercial art degree. And I had a fairly good portfolio. And my instructors encouraged me. They said, you know, you've got a pretty good book, Jeff. You could probably get a job in Chicago or some of the bigger cities. And I said, no way. I want to live in the Driftless region. I want to live in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, because I was already a young gobbler geek back then, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and you made a business out of it.
Eventually I did, yeah. I worked for 20 years, and I am a graphic designer and wildlife artist.
Yeah, and some beautiful work.
Yep, the selling season for turkey calls is short but intense.
You got to be ready for it.
Yes,
it comes and it goes. It's kind of like the Christmas season for in the retail business.
Yep, when the weather starts getting warmer. And the turkey hunters start hearing the cardinals singing and the robins singing in the morning. And then all of a sudden they hear that first gobble of the spring. And then they're motivated to buy turkey calls.
Well, let's take some calls. And we'll have Dan still here and involved as well. So Chris in Middleton, we'll go to you next. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Larry, Dan, and Jeff. Would you like to talk a little bit about the state of Wisconsin DNR app called Hunt Wisconsin? It's or Hunt Wild, I guess I should call it that.
Hunt Wild,
it's an Android app, and it's absolutely amazing. You have all the zone maps, you've got topographic maps, you've got latitude and longitude maps, satellite maps, you got waypoints. You can do everything on this to manage your hunting. And you, as you're driving out in the country, you can, you know, put latitude and longitude where you sight in maybe a small flock, and then you can go and talk to the farmer, you know, that, hey, I saw some turkeys up there. Anyway, just letting folks know that you just go to Google Play, you can get that app. It's great. So
I have it on my iPhone, as a matter of fact. And Dan Simola, you talk about this in your video.
Yeah, we do. And I don't use it, to be honest with you, but because I try to be as unplugged as I can when I'm outside, but it really is a benefit with all the features that Chris just mentioned. So, Chris, that was a better plug for it than I could give.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good thing to have for all kinds of hunting. You know, I'm in the Shawamigan National.
Well, you hunt up north a lot, don't you? Yeah.
I'm in the Shawamigan National Forest, where you might go a long way before you find a road again,
yeah.
And at some places, and you kind of know where you are because there's that GPS function to it as well, which is really nice. But it's something I've used in the woods when I was during deer season.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of times when I was just sitting there not seeing anything, I pulled the phone out and played around.
But you know what, Larry? You know what happened when you were looking at your phone? That big buck watch right
behind
you.
That's when they show up, yeah.
Right, that's when they show up for sure.
Yep.
But that hunting app, and of course anybody can get that app, and it's free.
Yep.
It's free, so I've got it on my iPhone, and you can get it on your iPhone or your other
Android. Yep.
Android, no problem. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Well, let's go to Bob in Knife River, Minnesota next. Hi, Bob.
Hey, it's really Bill. Thanks for taking my call. I'm an avid hunter for rough grouse and sharp tails and woodcock, and I'm a retired Minnesota DNR biologist, and I have a little different take on turkeys. My son's hunt turkeys, and I've eaten wild turkey. But I look at the turkey as kind of an alien to a lot of northern habitats. I'm not sure about northern Wisconsin, but for sure north central and northern Minnesota. And really nobody's done any work on the effects of the wild turkeys, the newly reintroduced, newly hatched wild turkeys, on the environment. When you watch a wild turkey or a few turkeys walk through the woods, they're scratching and eating just about everything that lives, including insects and salamanders and worms and everything else. I'd just like to get your guys' take on that.
All right. Jeff, we'll go to you first.
Well, that's very interesting, and I think it's we need to understand that the studies have not been done to actually find out of any kind of damage that turkeys are doing. Personally, I have my wife and I bought property in western Wisconsin in the year 2000, and ever since I own that property, I have had I leave a winter food source for the turkeys, and I've watched turkeys for all that time, and this is going to relate a little bit to some of the people who claim crop damage, and ultimately turkeys, in my opinion, get a lot of blame for some of the things that could be happening because they're very visible, and they are new, but you know, in northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, technically, they might not be a actual native species, but they are native to they are America's bird. They were native to much of North America, and I can't help but think that they probably improve the environment and habitat for other, you know, because everything always works as a whole in the environment.
Yeah.
I think different species find their balance, for one thing. when I began turkey hunting, actually the same year Jeff did in 87, there were turkeys all over the place in Vernon and Crawford counties. And for the next 10 years, we saw them driving, you know, just any country road here and there and everywhere. You always saw birds displaying. And now I'm seeing fewer birds in the part of the state where we live and more over in Ozaukee County. Central Wisconsin, the group that I used to hunt with when I lived over there, the North Shore Wild Turkey Federation chapter, had a youth hunt last weekend, and they posted a photo of 13 kids with adult toms, and they said more were coming in. I guess I'm getting a little off topic here, but I think I would agree with Jeff. I'd be interested in seeing any studies that might be done to show the impact of turkeys on habitat. Sure, they eat salamanders. I think about all the little toads that hatch in my pond, and my chickens probably eat most of them, and the ones my chickens don't eat, the crows probably get, but a few survive.
If you think about, and I'm thinking about your video now, because there's a really interesting aspect of your video which talks about a year in the life of a turkey, and in the spring, their primary source of protein is insects. So they're eating a lot of bugs.
Yeah, that's right. And that was Matt Wiegman, who is the regional representative for the Wild Turkey Federation. He really gave us kind of an overview, as you say, a year in the life of the turkey. And they're coming out of their hardest time, survival time now, the harsh winter we had, and they're trying to eat whatever they can find. And then once the eggs hatch and the poults are on the ground, they need protein, and that usually coincides with the arrival of a lot of insects, grasshoppers, crickets, and worms, and all sorts of bugs, and they eat, they fill up on protein and those fatty foods, so to speak, for a month or so, and then they're off and eating other things. They eat greens. One of the birds that was taken by our group last weekend was actually a bearded hen. And she was shot late in the morning, and so she had something in her crop, and we opened it up, and she had some corn, one whole hickory nut, and a lot of greens. And they will digest. They can grind up a whole hickory nut in their gizzard.
And, and in the fall, you know, they're in the woods, and they're after acorns, aren't they, Jeff?
Absolutely. A very interesting, talking about looking in the turkey's crop. So, okay, I'm a gobbler geek, right? I'm pretty geeky about this. That is one thing that I've always enjoyed looking at is, when you're processing your turkey, you get to see what's in the crop. What are they eating? And I had a fall hen that I had harvested, and it had a full crop of acorns. It had a whole acorn. It had a half acorn and everything else. This is about a baseball-sized mass of acorns. Everything else was 1/4 inch down to 1/32 of an inch pieces of acorn. So I'm thinking to myself now, is that turkey pecking the acorn apart? And I took a screwdriver and I started banging on the acorn, and it became evident to me that, no, that's not what turkeys are doing. That hen's eyesight is so phenomenal that she was picking up, obviously had to have been, the little pieces of acorn that have fallen out of the deer's mouth when a deer is eating it, or when the squirrels are eating the acorns. But in the leaf litter of a fall woods, they are picking up those teeny tiny little pieces of acorns.
Yeah. He is a geek, isn't he?
Yeah, that's for sure. And the gizzard does the rest.
Yes.
Grinds the rest of it up. Well, let's see. Bill and Spooner, it's your turn. Thanks for calling, Bill.
Yeah, hi. I just got a quick one on the hunting accessibility. Being that turkeys, they're prevalent throughout the state. I'm up here in northern Wisconsin. It's extreme. Sometimes it can be hard to get a tag, especially a leftover tag. And sometimes I'd like to go hunting out by my friends in southern Wisconsin, but I can't do that because of tag availability. The way I look at it is that with deer hunting, you can go anywhere in the state without deer tag. And there's more deer in southern Wisconsin than there is in Wisconsin. not arguably, it's fact. Exact same thing with turkey. There's more turkey in southern Wisconsin than there is in northern Wisconsin, but I am limited to going wherever I have to be able to choose to get a tag if I can get one during that time. Why? My question is, I been brought out to a statewide hunt. I think it'd be more beneficial for the state and more beneficial for the hunters as well. Yeah. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Bill, thank you for calling. Jeff, do you want to have a comment?
First of all, there are tags available that you can purchase online for southern Wisconsin. And I believe there is, you know, an element of being able to control how many people hunt in a certain area. It was originally designed to help ease the hunting pressure, and it makes it so that people aren't, because turkey hunting is one of those things where you don't really want other people around you when you're hunting, and it helps spread out the overall impact of how many people are out there doing that activity.
It really makes for a better experience. If you've sometimes been deer hunting, you know that depending on where you are, you might find way more people than you wish were there. And with the way they do it, it pretty much can almost ensure that you're going to get a better hunt.
Yeah, yeah. And it was designed that way originally when they first came up with it. And we used to have many more zones that were like almost county-sized zones. And they did consolidate them a number of years ago in, do we got, six zones?
Seven
zones for the whole state.
And I think that made a lot more sense for sure. Well, we're not done talking about turkeys. We haven't heard. Well, we heard Jeff call a little earlier, but he'll call again after our news break. And we'll talk some more with Dan Small as well as we visit with Dan Small and Jeff Frederick about turkeys. We'll take a look at the news and weather. Gary in Madison and Joel in Washburn, I hope you can stay with us for your questions. We'll be back after the news. That was not a live turkey. That was the gobbler geek, Jeff Frederick, one of our guests today. And he makes calls, but he is a champion caller as well. And always great to have him come by to talk about the turkey season, which the youth hunt starts this weekend, as a matter of fact. And then right after that, the regular season starts. Dan Small with us as well. Dan's got a new video out about that focuses on wild turkeys in Wisconsin, covering a lot of aspects of it. And, you know, before we go to Joe and Gary, when can people see this video?
Well, tomorrow night on Milwaukee PBS at 9 p.m. in the normal time slot for Outdoor Wisconsin.
Yep.
We've got the show running. And then it will repeat at 9 a.m. on Saturday. So tomorrow night, Thursday, and then Saturday morning. And on the Wisconsin Public TV Digital Wisconsin channel, that's the .2 channel, it will air at 10:30 on Saturday morning. And then I think they've got a couple of repeat times. One of them is a 4 a.m. Monday, I believe. And,
weird.
I guess guys getting up to go turkey hunting.
Of course. That's not anything special for me to get up at 4.
The gobbler geek always gets up at 4. And the show and more is available, the version you saw, Larry, is available on the Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube.com and then just type in Wild Turkeys in Wisconsin, that should show up.
There we go. Well, now we'll go back to the phones. Gary and Joe have both been waiting a long time. Gary, I think you're next, and then Joe. Gary and Madison, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. So every Thanksgiving, we buy a turkey, about a 20-pound turkey. And I'm just kind of wondering, if I were to get a wild turkey, that I would get out in the woods, in the field, how big of a turkey would I need to get if I needed like a 20-pound butterball turkey that we buy at the store? And the last part of this is, what's the difference in the taste?
Yeah. Well, we've all, the three of us have all eaten a wild turkey. Jeff, I'll turn to you first.
Okay. Well, first of all, to equate that 20-pound turkey that you buy in the store, you would have to harvest a gobbler of a lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, a true trophy gobbler out there on the landscape to equal that size. Now, but you'll get a lot of meat out of a big old wild turkey gobbler. Let me tell you that I have three children and my wife, and our favorite meal that we have year-round is wild turkey. It has, in my opinion, much more flavor than a tame store-bought turkey. It is a little drier. But the way I make it in a slow cooker, it comes out just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Dan?
Yeah. A 20-pound gobbler might yield a 12- or 13-pound carcass.
Yeah.
And when you get the feather, if you pluck it, which I used to do, I don't anymore, if you pluck it, you'll be surprised and a little disturbed by the size of the breast, because it's not like a butterball turkey or like the Cornish cross chickens that you buy. You know, these are lean, mean running machines that fly a little bit.
Oh yeah.
And the flavor is, there is more flavor in my opinion.
Yeah.
The meat is drier. The thighs and legs will be tougher than what you're used to, but you can take those drumsticks. What I do now is I take the breasts off, both sides, take the legs off, and then there's a little kind of a nugget of meat on the shoulder blade.
Yeah.
I take that off, and take the breast and separate the tender, the turkey tender, which is the underside of the breast, and that's a delicious meal for two people, you know, from each side. But take those drumsticks, put them in a slow cooker, or I suppose a pressure cooker. You've got a pressure cooker.
I've got an Instant Pot.
There you go.
Yeah, put it in the pressure cooker, and they're going to come out beautifully.
Yeah, but I put it in a slow cooker and put it on low and forget it. And, you know, 8 hours or 10 hours, and the meat just falls off the bone.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. There you go, Gary. Good luck. I hope you get out there and get one sometime. Joe in Washburn, it's your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Hey, Dan. This is Joe. I'm still up here in the Finn settlement by the Sioux River.
Cool.
And just this morning, I was talking to a bunch of my fellow workers from the past from Washburn High School, and we were talking about the turkey population. And believe me, you haven't had a bad day until you know, you've seen a few turkeys on the hood of your truck. There's been significant damage to people's vehicles because of that. But I guess, you know, the question that I wanted to pose out there was that, you know, we've got wolves, fisher, coyotes, bobcats, fox. I hear coyotes every night up at my home. And yet I'll see 25, 30 turkeys crossing the road right down from where I hear those coyotes howling. And I'm wondering, you know, what do turkeys have going for them that predators haven't just diminished their population?
Well, they've got great senses and great reflexes, good eyesight, good hearing. Coyotes do take them. I wounded a bird that I couldn't find one late afternoon, and I went back the next morning and found feathers here and feathers there, and found where it had to be coyotes that ran it down. And I found the head and one leg, and the rest of it was just gone. And I have a friend who actually witnessed a flock of birds fly down from the roost when he was deer hunting, bow hunting. And he said there was a coyote hiding behind a bush, and it jumped out and grabbed a Jake by the neck and killed it instantly. And, you know, the next day that bird was gone. But, you know, everything. Hawks, owls eat the young ones, other predators, fishers, bobcats, You know, but they're survivors. Some of them make it through, and that's what happens.
And the I just would add, from your video that I just recently watched, I was reminded again that a hen turkey will lay 9 to 14 eggs.
Yep.
In a clutch. It's interesting because they lay one a day, don't they, Jeff?
Yes, exactly. You know, the wild turkey is a prey species, and that is how that is how they are successful. Is an old hen that has had experience having a nest and then also hatching out the poults and then raising them up. When that hen gets that kind of experience. And turkeys can be very long-lived. They are very good at maintaining a population. And once a wild turkey becomes an adult, they are, as Dan said, they have phenomenal eyesight. They are fantastic flyers. And I've witnessed turkeys make coyotes look like fools because the coyote will run after them and they just fly up in a bush and look at them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've got ways to cope. They've got ways to cope, and I believe I think it was somebody from the DNR in your video was talking about the fact that there's predation, but given the numbers of turkeys that can be produced in a year, and even in a bad spring, as they were talking about, if they lose their eggs. They can re-nest.
They'll re-nest two or three times if they have to, especially an older hen. And
exactly.
Have fewer eggs the second time and very few the third time, but it does happen. Joe, John and I are hunting turkeys up on our property up there on Memorial Weekend. I'll look you up if you're going to be around.
All right, Joe, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, I haven't given the number in a while, so we have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Question or experience to share? Love to hear from you. I want to go to the emails as well. We actually had a phone call from Ashley calling all the way from New Zealand to say he's loving the show and it's reminiscing about his days in Wisconsin. So I think that'll take the record as the longest phone call on the show today anyway. Oh, man. And Dean in Harper's Ferry, Iowa, emailed a photo we were talking earlier about white birds. He says he's seen them in Minnesota and South Dakota. And this one is from Harper's Ferry, Iowa, and he's got a photo of a white wild turkey, and another turkey that looks a little more natural, I think. But as you were explaining, it's a recessive gene, right, Jeff?
Yeah, and in the photo, I would describe that as what we call a smoky phase. It does have, if you look at those feathers real close, there is some pigment in the feathers, and some of those actually do maintain some of that iridescent look that wild turkeys have. Now, I've seen pure white wild turkeys, and they do not have that, well, as far as our human eyes can see, they don't have that, what I call iridescence, or it's commonly known as iridescence, which is actually light refraction. It isn't an actual pigment in the turkey's feather. What you're seeing when you see that iridescence is a refraction of light similar to what a rainbow would be, or, you know, oil on water.
And when I think about the decoys that you make, you actually use feathers from the turkeys in making your decoys.
I do. And it's because I am such a geek about this that many years ago I was watching one of my favorite shows on Wisconsin Public Television, and it was a documentary on birds that really didn't have anything to do with turkeys or turkey hunting, but the ornithologists were studying the iridescence in birds and birds' vision and how it relates to their breeding behaviors. And long story short, I became convinced that that's why those plastic decoys with paint didn't always work so great. So personally, when I'm out hunting, I always make sure I have an element of the real iridescent turkey feathers so that the old smart gobbler can't figure out that I'm trying to dupe him.
And he pulls those feathers off the skin and glues them one at a time on the turkey body that he makes.
And I also make feather art in the same way, right? Because as a wildlife artist and a commercial artist, I've always thought that structure, that light refraction that's coming off the wild turkey's feather is such a beautiful thing. And I actually am making abstract paintings with wild turkey feathers.
Yeah, it's really, really beautiful. By the way, how do people, I wanted to talk about your calls too. How do people see your stuff and buy your things?
I do shows in the upper Midwest, like outdoor shows, and then I have a website. I don't have any retail locations. My website is frederickchampionschoice.com, and I also have a YouTube channel. A few videos on there. You can maybe pick something up on learning how to turkey call. And I want to encourage, it's not just for turkey hunters, but, I've often said that the ultimate bird watching experience would be for just an avid nature lover like myself. Pick up one of these little gadgets, learn how to make a few turkey calls, and then, heck, go to the UW Arboretum and call in a big gobbler and look at his beautiful iridescence. And when you're talking to a turkey, it's a thrill.
Yeah, it really, really is a thrill. And I've got your calls, and I'm not nearly as good as you are, but I guess I'm passable because I can get them to actually respond.
Well, Larry, and I want to just mention this. Especially because we have a lot of new hunters who are coming into this, a lot of times because they're looking for that locally sourced natural, something really neat to put on your dinner table that you're involved in. But here's the thing about calling turkeys is some people are intimidated by trying to do this. And what happens is people look at me, a champion turkey caller, and they say, well, Jeff knows what he's saying to the turkeys, but you want to know the honest truth, Larry, is I have no idea exactly what I'm saying to the turkeys. It doesn't matter. If you can get fairly proficient with a turkey call, we humans don't know what we're saying to the turkeys, but if we can kind of mimic them, boy, it's a lot of fun, and it works. You'll get responses from the turkeys.
Yeah, you absolutely will. And, it takes a while just to kind of get the hang of it. But I practiced on a long drive.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, just don't worry. You're not going to say anything wrong to the turkeys. Just get good with that call. And it's just a lot of fun.
Already somebody say, well, where do you go for that again? So tell us again.
It is frederickchampionschoice.com, and then on YouTube, it would be just type in Jeff Frederick Turkey Calls, and you'll find my channel.
All right, there we go. Well, let's take another call or two here. Let's go to, who's next? Robert in Hillsboro's next. Hi, Robert.
Hi there. This is Robert from Hillsboro, and we have the absolute pleasure of having Dan mentor us with my son and myself for our first hunts, but we also got my father involved, and we had a three-generation hunt with Dan. So I just wanted to share our appreciation for that. But the biggest thing that I take away from getting into the turkey hunt, but also deer hunting, is just the reverence of nature and allowing my son to stay connected to being outdoors and being part of the system. And I just want to say hey to Dan, and that's it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Dan? Robert, pleasure to hunt with you and your dad last year. And I hope, or actually it was 2 years ago, I think. Now, we had that on Outdoor Wisconsin on my show. And I wish you good luck this season. I hope you guys are hunting this weekend.
Thank you very much for that call. Appreciate your call. Dot in Manitowoc, let's go to you next. Hi, Dot.
Hi. I was surprised to learn that turkeys sleep in trees at night. Now, certainly they don't sleep in the city. What sort of trees do they look for? Do they look for pine, for maples, or a weeping willow, or what type of tree do they sleep in?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a great question, and it's very interesting because, yes, from the time a turkey is about 14 days, 2 weeks, those little poults can start to fly, and they absolutely want to roost off of the ground, away from nighttime predators. So a wild turkey will spend every night of its entire life, short of those 2 weeks, roosted in a tree. And what I have found is the taller the tree, the better. Big white pines, big oaks. If you head out west, it's really neat to see wild turkeys in the western states because there are not many trees. But along the riparian corridors, the rivers, there are big, giant, old, ancient cottonwoods, and there can be 10, 20, 30 turkeys roosting in two trees out in the western states.
It's absolutely amazing. I'm just thinking of one morning going out before light and setting up my decoys, and light comes, and pretty soon here comes three gobblers, and I shot one, and I went out to get it, and where I had set my blind up, a big tom had been sitting right above me.
Yeah,
I didn't even know it was
really
there.
Cool.
And it flew off while I was picking up the one that I'd shot.
Yeah. One thing that many people don't understand is what incredibly strong flyers turkeys are. I have seen them maneuver through the trees in ways that I never thought a bird that large would be possible of doing. And I've also watched them come out of the trees and hardly make a sound. I mean, they're so good at flying.
Christina wants from Glenwood City wants to know, how can she find a mentor?
I think that if you go on the gowild.wi.gov, or maybe it's just the DNR site, and you look up Learn to Hunt Turkeys, you should be able to find a connection there. Yeah. Or if you want to email me, dsoradio@gmail.com, I can put you in touch with John Motovilov, whose email I have, but I just don't have it in front of me here. He is the fellow who's on the video and talks about mentoring, and he's the guy who coordinated the hunt I was on last weekend. So dsoradio@gmail.com.
Yep, or go to the DNR website and type in mentoring.
Yeah,
there are lots of wonderful opportunities for that. And so, Christina, thanks for that question. And here we are out of time. Dan, Jeff, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. I know people are going to enjoy your videos. Your new one, it's a dandy. I was really glad that I had a chance to see the whole thing.
Thanks, Larry. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, it was fun to be here with Jeff.
Yeah, it was. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll do it again.
Yeah, we hunted together in a blind. It's the first time we've been in the studio together, although he's been on
everybody
my show.
Out there have a safe and successful spring hunt, and pick a few mushrooms while you're out there.
Yeah,
the last we didn't get to talk about, and that was one of them, Jeff Frederick, the Gobbler Geek, Dan Small of Outdoor Wisconsin, our guest today. Thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.